From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
We're back on another Thursday night on The Dice Men Cometh. I'm Mark.
And I'm Garth.
And Garth, you know, I've been checking out the cricket on TV, believe it or not. And there's been quite an interesting series of cricket being played in America.
What?
Yeah, played in America between Warney's Warriors and Tendsachan's Blasters.
Okay.
So it's two teams of old-timers, if you like, all the old stars, and they're playing three games across America, one in New York, one in Houston, one in LA, at baseball stadiums. And it started me thinking, you know, if we got teams together to play competitive board games, well, we could obviously have Leon's Losers.
Of course.
We could have Mark's Masters, because I would have, you know, probably some older people on my team.
Yeah, definitely.
Garth's Grinders, because they'd be, you know, grinding out the wins. And if we, you know, if we need to make up a four, so we could have round robin, you know, we could bring on that guy who used to be on the show.
Sure.
We could have Trent's Tinders.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be an awesome session.
Yeah, we could do that. But anyway, we're here on Edge Radio to talk about games this week.
That's right.
And what are we going to have on the show, Garth?
Well, we are going to talk about what we've been playing this week. Now, it's really what have I been playing this month, because it's been a month since I was on this show.
I know.
Yeah, so I hope it's been all right. I should listen in on what you did.
No, you didn't miss anything. It's been fantastic.
No, I heard Trent was on last week, or you just called Leon Trent for the episode. Is that how it went? We're going to talk about what we've been playing this week. We are going to do a long overdue recap of our last Descent session.
That's right. People have been hanging out for that one.
Exactly, with some interesting twists and turns as well. I am going to dip my toe into Kickstarter and try and do some form of a little bit of an update on that as well. And we've got some other stuff. But we always go over time, so we won't talk about that yet.
I'm sure we won't fit it all in, but we certainly do have time for a punch in the face.
Here's a punch in the face.
Bam! Take that.
Yeah.
Friends or Rom, giving us a punch in the face on a Thursday night with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
I need to give you a punch in the face, Mark.
Oh, no.
Do you want to tell us what episode and what day of the week and who we are and what we're doing?
So, of course, I've already said we're the Dice Men Cometh. And this is a show about board games, card games, role-playing games, miniatures games, and any sort of game that's generally, I was going to say not on electronic device, but we cover those as well.
We do, except if it's upwards, yeah?
Yeah, let's not talk about that. That could get me in a lot of trouble. Episode 92 on the 12th of November. So we're not going to get in episode 100 before Christmas, but certainly I'd say, I reckon it's going to be January.
Yeah,
it's very a big exciting.
Yeah.
Anyway, Garth, what have we been playing lately?
Well, we have been experiencing climate change.
Well, we sure have.
Have we ever? And today is an actual real representation of that, because it is horrible out
there. It's a miserable day here, isn't it?
But we have been experiencing the year 2097, when the Earth has been enveloped in a cataclysmic shift in climate, plunging the globe into another ice age. And did you know that 90% of the population has died?
What?
Yeah, that's the world we're living in, because we are playing Arctic Scavengers. Now, this is a deck-building game. It is by designer Robert K. Gebhardt, who says he's also the founder of a design company and publisher, but they've only done the first edition of Arctic Scavengers, so we'll see how that goes. But it is the new release that came out in 2015. The first printing of this came out in 2009. It's a deck-building game. Comes in a, sort of a box that fits a couple of expansions as well, which is great in the new edition. It plays 45 to 60 minutes. It's published in this version by Rio Grande Games, and it plays from 1 to 5, but we're really only going to talk about the games that go from 2 to 5, because the 1 to 5 is a little solo expansion where you're playing against the mechanics of the game, whereas we're going to talk about the game where we play against the mechanics of you and the other players at the table. Now, essentially, everyone is going to be the leader of a small tribe of survivors, and all you're trying to do is make it through. You're just trying to survive. You are going to be focusing on collecting your resources, tools, medicines, and those mercenaries. You want them to join your tribe.
Of course.
So that you ultimately, by the end of the game, have grown your tribe to be the largest, because the largest tribe wins. Now, it is a deck builder, so there's a whole bunch of different resources out on the table. But thematically, it is everything's in scarce supply, so you have got to try and stay peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
You're just trying to worry about your little tribe. However, skirmishes will happen. You will fight.
Yes.
And this is what changes it from a lot of other deck builders, because those other pesky tribes are going to try and take your stuff.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they're going to try and grab some fat loot from the contested resource pile, which will give them a really big advantage in the future rounds. Mm. Now, as I said, this game is determined by the player who's going to have the largest tribe at the end of the game. And that's it. All you're doing is a couple of things on your turn. You're going to start by drawing your cards. Now, everyone's going to start with an identical deck of 10 cards, which is a pretty thin deck.
Yeah.
It's very, very small. You've got four refugees in this deck who are basically useless.
Yeah, yeah.
They've
been imported from Christmas Island or Nauru?
Oh, no, these ones are completely legal. Oh. So, you know, they're fine. You've got three scavengers who are kind of the jack of all trades, yeah, but master of none. They can do a bit of everything. You've got one brawler who's your main fighter. You've got one spear, which is your hunting implement.
Yes.
And then you've got your shovel. Now, we'll get to what the tools do in a minute, because basically what you're going to do is you draw five cards, and there's a fair chance you're going to draw a fair bit of crap in the first couple of times. You're then going to use those cards to gather resources. So that involves going out and doing a couple of things. You can either go and dig. So there's each card has four abilities. You've got the ability to, well, we'll do them in the order from top to bottom. Draw, so you spend a card which will allow you to draw some other cards from your deck.
Yeah.
You can either go and dig essentially means you go into the junkyard pile, which is a face-down deck of about 40-odd 50 cards, which has a whole bunch of really good stuff in it. All of it is tools, which will aid your tribespeople in doing things. But there's also, not surprisingly, a hell of a lot of junk in there.
Yes.
So it's a bit of a gamble. Now, the next thing you can do is you can go and hire mercenaries. This is where all the deck building mechanics come in, because you've got a table full of the potential different types of mercs that you can go and hire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've then also got hunting. Now, hunting is essentially getting the food that you need to bribe the mercenaries. So they sort of come under the same hunt/hire. Now, after the first two rounds of this game, it then introduces the skirmish phase. Now, the skirmish phase is probably one of my favourite parts of this game, because it's where you get a whole bunch of player interaction.
Yeah, and the thing that jumped out at me immediately in this game was that phase was quite different to your Dominions, your Thunderstones, your Ascensions, all those sort of more vanilla-y deck builders.
Yeah, exactly right. And look, basically what it is you are spending your turn doing all of those things. You're going to draw your five cards. You're going to go out and do stuff with the five cards that's in your hand. You're going to try and get more cards, either by drawing them from your own deck, by hiring new mercenaries, or going to the junkyard. Or a lot of the cards have a fight value. Now, you've got a lot of the tribes people, like a brawler, who might be particularly strong at fighting.
Yeah.
Or you've got people like the refugees who can't even fight.
Yeah.
All they can do...
They've lost the will to live.
Exactly right. They can't do anything, but if you give them a tool, at least they can go out and hunt, or at least they can go and dig in your junk pile. But even to do that, they need another card, a tool card, which gives them some buff that allows them to have that ability.
Mm.
So what you're doing at the end of your turn is you're figuring out, do I want to play these cards for their dig or draw or higher value? Or do I want to hold them back in my hand and not play them because they have got a fight value on them? And when we get to the skirmish, which is going to happen every round from the third one on, do I have enough fight to be able to win this skirmish and take the top card from the contested resource pile, which is a pile of sweet, sweet goodness? Every card in this deck is fantastic.
Yes.
There's only 14 cards in the deck, so it's pretty tight. But it's also the timing mechanic, because as soon as that contested resource deck is empty, game over, count up your population, and away you go.
And I seem to remember there, if there was a tie in the fight, no one, after a couple of tiebreakers, no one got that resource and it went into the dig pile.
Yep.
I really liked how only one person got to see basically what that contested resource was going to be before the fight. The person who was like, what's
the initiator?
The first
player? First player is called the initiator. Yeah. From the third round on, what the initiator does is their first action is has a peek at the top card so that they have a bit of inside knowledge to know what we're fighting for.
Yeah, and that dilemma of, okay, do I dig in higher where I'm certain to get something?
Yep.
might not be that great, particularly early on, because you haven't got a lot to spend.
Exactly.
Or you haven't got a lot of digging that you can do, because you can dig multiple cards. You only get to keep one, but you can dig down more with more cards.
Yeah.
Or do I hold those cards back? You're not able to do anything else with them, but hopefully you're going to win that fight at the end, the skirmish, and take the contested resources. And I know I had a couple of rounds where I won in a row, and the cards I got were like high victory point cards, a couple of tribes.
Tribe families, and which basically do nothing apart from grow your population.
And look, in the end, it was those cards that got me over the line by one ruble or
exactly.
one person.
Yes.
Very closely from Oren.
Mm.
But I liked that this game mixed it up from your normal deck builder. I liked what it added. I think with the theme, they're probably going to have to bring it from 2097 to maybe 2017, the way we're going. But yeah, like I really liked it. And we played, I think, with one expansion, and you said there was a few others there?
Yeah, well, there are. And that's why when I was writing down my thoughts about this, the first thing I wrote down was, feels like this is a review of half the game. Because basically there are 9 more modules or expansions that we can add to this. You can add them in any combination, and you can add them all in to make a big behemoth of a game, but they add a whole bunch of other thing, not least of all they add a whole different style of mercenaries, because the mercenaries come in a few different styles in this game, but the themes are pretty much the same. You've got ones who will do some level of digging. They might be able to dig one or two into the junkyard pile. They have a certain hunt value to obviously give you the ability to buy more cards. There's also medicine, which will give you the ability to buy some medical-based cards, which are becoming more powerful as the base game cards that you can choose from, the most powerful ones, require at least 2 medicine.
Yeah,
and medicine's pretty scarce to come by.
I was going to say, that was really tricky to get enough medicine in just drawing 5 cards to be able to afford those higher level of mercenaries.
Exactly.
That was quite challenging.
Yeah, it was. So there's a couple of really good options in the base game, but the fact that there is around about another 20 different types of mercenaries alone to be able to add it into this. Not to make mention that you can build buildings, which becomes a really interesting mechanic because that allows you to store cards underneath it, that you can bring them out at any time and really do a bit of a fooled you kind of mechanic. There is snipers who can go and destroy other cards that have been played.
Ooh.
There are gangs, and that's one of the ones that we did play.
Yes.
Where there are 3 gangs, and with the expansion that brings out more, which are basically an end-of-game scoring boost.
Yes, yes.
So for the gangs that you got, you had the highest initial population.
Yes.
So you got another gang which was drawn
boosted
to that.
Up even more,
someone
yeah.
else had the most tools, and they had a gang that were called the Gearheads, that wanted to go to the tribe that had the largest tools.
Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of different things, including different starting cards. So there are refugees that have some base abilities, and there are also more hardy scavengers. So you can basically tweak this whole game to ramp up the level all the way to 11. So I think it's certainly we've played, you know, the base fundamentals of the game, but in terms of an overall review, we got a long way to go.
Yeah, there's a lot there left to go, and I would definitely give it another try. I mean, I'm a fan of deck builders from the start as it is,
yep.
but I like the differences that this one brought to the table as well.
Yeah, I agree. I do like the artwork. I think it was really really appropriate. I thought it was very evocative. It was all very blues and darks, and, you know, it looked very, very cold.
And even the thematicness of, you know, to get stuff, you got to go and dig because it's out there buried under ice and snow. And you've got a very good chance of pulling up crap or nothing.
Exactly right. And the other thing that I think elevates it is with the skirmishes, you've also got the ability to just bluff your way through it and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Because everyone in their turn order is going to declare, I'm holding back 1 card, 2 cards, 5 cards for the skirmish. But you don't have to tell anyone what they are. They could be completely useless refugee cards or tools or whatever. They have no value at all. But because you're playing 4 of them, that sort of sends a message to everyone else, oh, this guy could be serious and wanting to have that really big contested resource win.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm. So pretty much 2 thumbs up from us, but we know there's plenty more game there still to play.
Yeah, is there ever? And look, we have played a fair few deck builders, so it was great to be able to jump into another one without having to worry about how do we figure it out, how to play it. We were playing this game within about 15 minutes of opening the box. It was awesome.
Yeah. Now, another quick one that we played. Shout out to our friends
at Rule and Make.
At Rule and Make, their game Entropy
exactly
recently
right.
kickstarted.
Yeah.
Now I've got to declare, I wasn't a fan of this game before we played it, because we did go to the trouble of doing a print and play.
Yes.
But at the time it was quite incomplete, I guess. There was only four actions. It was all black and white, obviously.
Yep.
And at the time I sort of felt like, no, this game, I'm not excited about it. I tell you what, I love this game.
Yeah, well, this is a really simple game, and it's a lovely small box. It cost, I think, $16 from memory, which is a tiny amount. This went really, really gangbusters in Kickstarter and smashed its targets, because you're right. So, look, essentially this is each player, we're playing in a parallel world. Every player has had their reality shattered, and you're trying to, I guess, piece together your reality. What that means is that you're drawing cards from a deck, trying to get the four cards that relate to your particular character. Every player has the same six potential actions that they can do. And when we played the original print and play, there was only four. It's played out over four rounds where everyone in secret chooses one of the six potential actions that they can do. All of those actions are numbered 1 through to 6 as well.
Yeah.
You flip them over simultaneously. And then they happen in ascending order from 1 through to 6. But, I hear you say, but if more than one player plays the same number, in terms of a same numbered action, that causes a
temporal clash,
which is essentially you can't do your action.
Yeah, yeah, it's a stalemate.
Indeed. So that also has some consequences, because over the course of four turns, if a player has more than three of these temporal clashes, that creates a fracture event, which essentially is the deck of cards. You get to draw the top three of them, and if one of them is from your reality, you get to keep it. So it's actually not a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. When the weird thing in our game was, we had Aiden, who, don't know how he managed to do it, he had a minimum of three temporal clashes every turn.
Well, I think he was just being a professional cock blocker, wasn't he?
Did a great job. But he ended up winning the game.
Yeah, and look, I think the production value on this is excellent.
Oh,
the
I was really impressed.
The fact that you've got a couple of different, I guess, wild fragments are what they're called, so they're ones that you can use at anyone can, but they're never safe. They can be taken from you. You've got the base version of those, and you've got this shiny version, which looks really, really cool. It comes with this really chunky metal coin, which is the anchor.
Yeah.
And the anchor, some of the cards have the ability to collect the anchor. It allows your once per temporal clash get out of jail free card, so that if you have the anchor and you have a temporal clash where you and someone else have played the same number, you still get to do your action, but you have to put the anchor back into the general pool for it to be collected again. It's a really clever little game, and something that I want to show to my son, because I reckon he'll really like it.
Yeah, look, I was really impressed with the production qualities, and the artwork was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But also, great depth of play in such a quick, short game. Yep. So I've absolutely got to take my hat off to Rule and Make.
Mm-hmm.
I do have Rise to Power sitting at home that I got in a in a generosity trade on Board Game Geek, and I haven't got it to the table yet, and I've heard very good things about that one as well. So, you know, Alan and Al from Rule and Make, they are on a winner with these two, and I'm really interested to see, well, they've got their other game on Kickstarter.
Yeah, we might talk about that later.
About that in a little while, but before then, spoiler alert. Yes, that was Heroes Go Down by Suzanne Vega. Not wanting to give any spoilers, but it's time to talk about our Descent campaign.
Ooh, exciting. Now, this was so long ago that I hope you can refresh what the hell we did, because I can't remember.
Look, I'll certainly do my best. Episode 3. Three Heads, One Mind. When we last left our heroes, they'd had some success against the evil Borgaroth in the swamp, and they were feeling pretty good about themselves.
Woohoo!
Yay, we're feeling good about ourselves!
Woo! Yeah, we are, yeah!
Anyway, travelling through and around the marsh, you follow what few leads you've come across in abandoned towns and half-coherent survivors. A sickness is creeping through the region.
Dun-dun.
And beyond, another disturbing event you assume must somehow be related to the numerous attacks on the local villages. A recent trail leads you to the large stone hovel locked by an imposing iron door. Black smoke pours out of a chimney, and tiny gaps in the mortar reveal the orangey glow of a fire inside. Unfortunately, a massive Etten blocks the entrance, scratching at one of his two heads. A large rusted key dangles at his belt, perhaps a match to the lock affixed to the door. As you start to creep forward, a screech from above draws your attention.
Prowlers and thieves! Prowlers and thieves! Smash them! Grind them!
A twisted bird-like creature screams, flapping its leathery wings. Tied to its leg, you can see another large key,
what?
A twin to the one held by the Etten. You hope one of the keys will open the door, as you imagine no small amount of trouble will be required to obtain them. Bum, bum, bum.
I'm just so glad that bird didn't sound like Jar Jar Binks. Oh, my God.
That bird, as it were, was Chakri!
Chakri, the harpy.
The master or mistress harpy.
Mm.
And the Etten was Grugnik.
Wow.
The master Etten. So, of course, in this, we were faced with... There's these two big bads. Both of them got a key. One of them unlocks the door. The other one doesn't. Which it is, we don't know.
Yeah.
And I seem to remember that even that the Dr. Evil Overlord had an ability to swap the keys between the two, which
yeah.
they were face down, so we never really knew which was which. I also remember the Master Harpy didn't start on the board, but
That's
as
right.
soon as we touched a searching thing,
yep.
it came down and attacked us.
Exactly.
But it hadn't even had the ability to go off the board again, so obviously it was going to be an issue to kill it and get its key. And at the other end, you've got this massive Etten swinging a great club, beating the bejesus out of at least one of us.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
You'd be playing a bit of Chumbawamba, you get knocked down, you get up again, you get knocked down, you get knocked up again, and so on and so on and so on, because that was a very rinse and repeat old sort of way that the game went for you, wasn't it, Mark?
Well, look... I obviously, you know, took one for the team, ran off in one direction to distract the Etten to let the rest of you get in behind. Didn't expect him to come after me so quickly. And, I got knocked down. I got back up. I got knocked down. I got back up and I think I might have even got knocked down again.
Yeah.
It was tough
it was
for me for
brutal,
the first
wasn't
half.
It? But look, this was the third session of our campaign. We'd come off the back of two wins, which was great, including the one that was food for worms, where we had to save the villagers from the sinking thing and we cocked it up a little bit. But this was probably the first one where a major part of this game was that the party should be split up.
Yes.
Because you needed to try and attack these two master creatures, because we didn't know which one had the key,
yes.
and we needed that goddamn key to open that goddamn door so that we could win. And it was really tough, because our evil Dr. Mr. Overlord had unfortunately clued onto the fact that once you knock down one party member, it becomes a bit harder for the whole party to work together cohesively.
Yeah, and look, probably in a way, because my character... Rogana the Shade. The stalker. Not that I'm a stalker, but she's a stalker. With her traps, she operated pretty well by herself. So, I mean, and the fact that she moved really fast, she was the obvious one to split apart. And luckily I had Oren as the dwarf.
Yep.
Who
his,
had some
healing ability, yeah.
Sort of hang around, sort of close to me, but not really close enough to take damage himself. He was able to help me out at least once, one of those three times I was knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
I did really take quite a few for the team. and you guys sort of snuck around the other end. But this went right down to the wire.
It did.
Unfortunately, the heroes did go down.
Yes, we did. It was awful. However, I think in terms of the joy of this game...
Oh, yeah.
is trying to keep the story and the balance and making sure everyone has fun. So as much as it pains me to say it,
yes,
I'm kind of glad that the evil overlord had a win because he's not used to that. And I'm sure that the memory he'll have of this whole campaign will be even brighter because it doesn't matter what happens when we do the final session
because
he at least had that one win.
And again, this scenario, the third time of three, came down to basically one turn, one dice roll between one side winning and the other side. We managed to get the second key, or at least kill the second monster because the first monster didn't have the key, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you tried to rush off towards the door and were basically like half a turn short from putting the key in the door and turning it, and the game was over.
I know.
It was so close.
And it's just, look, it's testament to great game design, the fact that on every one of these campaigns and every one of these sessions, it has been so damn close.
Absolutely.
And look, I mean, obviously a hell of a lot of playtesting's gone into that, but the fact that we sit down and it's happened time and time again is just, it's fantastic. It makes me so excited to play what will ultimately be the final part of this campaign.
Yes.
Because that's going to be brutal. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. You'll get knocked down again, no doubt. But you can almost guarantee that it's going to be tense and a memorable night with your mates. And I think that's just a wonderful part of this game. I'm so glad we're doing this.
And look, just as the finale, the efforts of the blasted creatures installing you were successful. As the sound of a large group of approaching reinforcements reaches the clearing, cursing, you retreat before you can become surrounded by the horde of creatures coming through the wilderness. And that, of course, will lead us on to the finale of this, what do you call it?
Mini campaign.
Mm-hmm. Source of sickness.
Yeah, doesn't that sound encouraging? Doesn't that sound like we'll be able to... there we go. Doesn't that less sound like we're all going to die?
Now, coming up, we've got a special treat, though.
Really?
For the listeners.
Wow.
Straight after this. When the ship runs out...
Ah, women and men by They Might Be Giants. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, I seem to recall that Trent might have had a little bit of assistance in this game, and that's why he might have had a win. Because there was a player at the table who was being very devious, very conniving, and had a recording device taking what is normally very secret and very, very personal, and is about to make it public knowledge. So, Mark, you're about to play a live part of our game.
And I will say, firstly, just in case I've missed any swear words, language warning, I did try to get them all, but let's have a listen to what it sounds like to be at our gaming table during a Descent campaign.
Okay. So I'm going to draw my Oath of Honour. I'm going to choose this monster, and I'm going to go there. And then I am going to immediately perform an attack with a melee weapon against that monster.
Right. There's a new cat for Georgie.
Which I will choose my...
Oh, don't do that!
We came up with an ad. You go.
Of which I will do five damage plus...
Oh, sorry.
So I'm doing 5 damage to this harpy.
Right. The harpy is dead.
5 damage to the harpy?
What's correct. The point of stunning it if you're going to kill it?
Well, you stun it so it doesn't hit your back.
Yeah.
Before you did that,
but he
there was a poison
killed
dart
it before.
When you moved into that spot.
What do you mean?
You
killed it before it was stunned.
Where's your card?
Remember when he said no?
Right. No, you take back your card.
No, this one that says poison dart.
So Garth, you want to save the last
test
piece of stuff cross.
Your...
You know you can't resist it.
No, I definitely can.
Test your...
Test your Vuvuzela.
You can't use that card right properly.
Test your...
Read the first sentence.
What?
While here I was moving.
Play this card. He's done that every f***ing session.
Okay. Say this.
Oh, sorry.
Shut up!
I like our
you thing. Don't understand the pressure that I'm
what's
under.
What's the deal with airline peanuts?
What's the deal?
I like Aaron when he's drinking.
It says play when a character hero searches or opens the door. And he selectively chooses to ignore that.
Well, I'm desperate.
I think Aaron's volunteering.
What have you done to me?
Next time.
I am doing 5 damage plus something to you.
Well, understandably, I'm desperate. Right? Where are my dice?
They're all here. Which ones do you want?
For them, I want a grey one. There you go.
Okay.
Look at that.
I will not choose to use my surge ability.
No. So you've just disintegrated one of my things into dust.
Correct.
What is it doing?
And that, sir, is my action.
Okay, that's fine.
Did you use your unused surge to recover
a non-fatigue?
Can you do a fatigue action and then recover it? I guess you can't, can you? That would be out
all right.
of gaming.
Well...
Same
as
I've got. Everyone's turn, Mark. No, he
takes advantage of the fact that he's got his glasses on, because it doesn't happen very often. All right. So now I'm now because because you've had your turn,
right?
And I've done actually what I was planning to do. Now I'm going to use an exhaust to perform advance. Which is after defeating a monster with an attack using a melee weapon, exhaust his card to move up to my speed and perform an additional attack.
How are you doing that?
Because that's an advance, which requires no, it's not an action.
Right, but you've got to take a fatigue.
Which I have.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because there's a certain process and an order that these things need to happen in.
Okay.
Okay. Which Mark chooses not to.
Yeah, you'll have to explain that to me.
Well, I'll need to explain it to Mark.
Yep.
So, basically, I now get to move and advance again.
Oh, my goodness.
It's been the game already,
Move and advance again.
Correct.
What do you mean, move and advance?
It means I get to move up to my speed of 4.
Right.
And then perform an additional attack. And I've had to suffer a fatigue for it.
An attack or an action?
An attack.
Well, hurry up.
But definitely not an action.
Definitely not an action.
What this map needs is lava, so you can use the Etten to throw people into the lava. But there isn't any.
You sound like you should be an overlord.
I saw it.
One, two, three. So I'm now going to perform an attack on this herpy.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to perform an attack with my Iron Longsword.
And your ointment.
Ointment.
I like how he moved away from the big scary bombing off the back.
Yes, because I want him to crush the shit out of Mark. I'm doing 4 damage.
That's probably not enough. Do harpies get anything? No. For each other monster adjacent to the target, they get +1 damage.
So only you haven't rolled any damage.
No, yet. Shut up. 2.
Okay, so I'm going to use my... What am I going to use?
So his damage is 5.
He's not damaging, he's defending.
Yeah, but no, but his damage is, like, he's got 5.
Yeah, but he's still not, no, you're not damaging, you're defending.
No, but he's got 5, because his other two mates help him.
I can only see one mate.
Who's that?
It's me.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Yep.
I ain't got wings.
Yep. All right, so I do 2 damage to that one.
Right.
I got no wings.
So he's got 4.
That means he has 2.
That's correct.
Would you like 2?
Well done.
Yeah.
Is that everybody?
I believe so.
It's been annoying.
Except for the Overlord.
Draw a card, Trent.
So, what does that mean?
Stunned.
All they can do this turn is discard their stun condition.
Or token. This is the only thing they can do this turn. They basically can't do shit.
Is that what I just said?
No, I was listening to you.
What about cards?
Just recharge.
What about cards?
So...
They can't do anything. That would require them to have an action, I would say.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Basically, you've got a shitload of archers and a thug.
Right. So,
and
I'll kill this guy.
Where's Mark? That one. Yeah, go that way.
The little unassuming guy.
I'm on your side.
Furthest away from the battle.
Always a troublemaker. Mm.
So, at the end of my go, I can refresh
these
guys.
But that's all I can do.
And also place an additional one on the campsite, which would be which would be there. The Etten.
You want half a cheesy bread?
Aiden does.
Sure.
Aiden?
No, I got biscuits. I just have another bit of your bread.
So half the cheesy bread. With this weapon.
Yeah, smash in. That's what
exactly,
I would do.
Exactly, I agree.
You guys.
That's completely what I would do. Especially in his mouth.
Well, yeah, you get the guy who's out on his own. Smash him into paste.
I'm not on my own. Oren is backing me up.
Okay.
In the distance, way back.
All right, so I'm going to play Frenzy. Two attacks.
And he has reach. Mm-hmm. He can belt you across the...
Yes, he has reach. So that's a red and a blue.
Shouldn't have run up on me.
Could have put my trap on the other side.
Is that it? Is that what I get?
Mm. Half a cheesy bed.
Right.
Who is that? That's a dead man walking.
Good. Okay, so that's five damage and a f***ing...
Roll well.
Five, that's six, seven, eight.
What?
There's a reason, though. He's like twice as big as you. Mm. And he's a boss monster.
I'm going to exhaust this to add one, so that takes two off.
I'm going to exhaust this card to add two.
Whee! Thanks, Aaron.
Right, here comes the second attack.
I'll take him four.
Oh, Jesus.
Ow!
Ooh, okay, that's a little bit less. That was three.
He's hammering him into the mud.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Oh, I'm taking one for the team.
I'm taking seven for the team.
Bastards.
The team thanks you for your cooperation.
Oh, my goodness. Listening back to that was a bit painful. Firstly, I didn't notice how many times, and I'm not sure who was, but I'm going to say it was Trent, burped.
Yeah, that's some good flatulence.
Clearly
going on there,
that the beers were repeating on him. So apologies to anyone whose sensibilities we might have offended with that. But
you did a good job with your little teardrop blip thing to avoid people cursing every so often because that's how intense this was.
It was an intense session.
Yeah.
And look, it's funny because I know in the past where we've been to cons and we played games with people, when they've played a game with us, they certainly commented that it's like being on the podcast because all we do is just like give each other crap the whole time. There's the evidence.
There's the proof.
Live that we were all on the same team apart from Trent, obviously. But I think the rest of you gave me much more crap than Trent did.
Yeah, only because it's deserved.
Yeah, potentially. Anyway, look, let's lay down some more hot tunes and come back and talk about all the games that we can back.
Exactly.
And that was Nicole Miller with Taken, with the producer XN. DRJ, maybe Dr. J? I don't know, but you're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh with Mark and Garth. Now, Garth, you've been checking out all the good projects that we can back on Kickstarter because, you know, I felt really bad about Leon doing all that research last week and we never had time to.
I don't think you gave Leon a second thought. You were too busy talking with Tanya about PAX.
Look.
Just talking and talking and talking.
Yeah, okay.
Sounds like she had a good time, though.
Oh, look, I think she had a great time. I love having her on because she's always got such interesting stuff to talk about. She knows about so many things.
She does.
She's a smart cookie.
There you go. We only get the best here at the Dice Men.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of which, I'm going to try my hand at doing Kickstarter because it's not something I've done ever.
No.
So I've figured my way around the internet site, which is great. And the first thing I'm going to talk about is a game that you can't back, but you now can pre-order because it was mammoth. I count myself amongst the lucky 17,739 backers.
Wow.
And I'm talking Scythe by Jamie Stegmeier, our Stonemeyer Games.
It's
which,
a Scythe.
Exactly right. Now, I've talked about this game every so often for months and months and months as soon as it came on my radar. It is essentially a 4X game. Now, I won't ask you what the 4Xs mean because they are explore, expand, exploit, exterminate. It's set in an alternate history 1920s Eastern Europe.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's telling the story of five factions, i.e. players, competing over an unclaimed patch of land surrounding the mysterious factory. Now, this game, first of all, looks amazing. Mm. The art, and the artist is by a guy called Jacob Rosalski, just looks absolutely fantastic. It is completely appropriate. It's really odd because it's 1920s Europe.
Yes.
But then you've got giant mechs just cruising through the countryside. So it is a game
so it's
where...
It's a bit steampunky, is it?
No, not steampunky. It's just alternate reality. It looks very much like the 1920s that you grew up in, Mark. If there were giant mechs cruising through the land. Mm. Now, this game was the 12th most funded board game on Kickstarter with about $1.8 million in backers. Mm. As I said, just under 18,000 individual backers all throughout. And that's not including the people who have put in pre-orders through the Stonemaier Games website, which you can still do. This game, look, it's not coming out till at best August 2016.
Oh.
But in the box, you get about a billion things.
Yes.
This game had so many stretch goals, up to $1.5 million.
Ooh.
It succeeded and got all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It comes with a double-sided board, which we're big fans of. But what I like about it, and part of the reason I backed it a higher level, is because on the reverse of the board, it's exactly the same, but it comes with an additional board because everything is about 75% larger.
Oh.
So it's got the same sort of board, but it's just bigger, which, again, for you, would be really beneficial. I just think it would look really good on the table. It takes the board to almost being a meter long, which is going to be spectacular. It also, like I backed $112, which is about 500 Australian at the moment. So this is up there. No, it would be the most expensive Kickstarter game I've ever backed. Wow. But it comes with all the Stonemaier realistic resource tokens. Yes. It comes with these extensions. It comes with metal coins. It basically is all the things. Now, I jumped on and had a look. You can pre-order this, but it costs a lot more, including the postage to Australia. So I'm happy. Check it out, though, because it is absolutely brilliant. And look, they've got a great track record with games like Viticulture, Euphoria, and so on.
I was going to say the exact same thing that, you know, Jamie Stegmaier and Stonemaier Games, firstly, they're the Kickstarter kings. I mean, he has a podcast about how to do successful Kickstarters.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you see things he did like the Treasure Chest, where he replaces resources in a whole heap of other games with these beautifully crafted resin or wooden pieces, you know you're going to get top class quality in this game. That's
exactly.
For sure.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I've been talking about it so long, I had to back it, and it's closed, but it's straight away pre-ordered. So another thing that's only just come out, now it's only a couple of days into its Kickstarter, is a little game you might have heard of called Wits and Wages.
Oh,
now this is releasing...
Hang on.
So it's by North Star Games. They are releasing the Epic Geek Edition.
Oh.
Now, it plays 4 to 21 players in 15 to 30 minutes. So it's your basic Wits and Wages. It's, look, the base games, because there's been a hell of a lot of expansions already, have sold over a million different copies. It's a classic party game about guessing and betting, and it's not about you being right. It's about you betting on who is going to be right, because basically each player has to come up with a guess about a question that no one should really know the answer to. Guesses are then placed up on an odds board, you know, 3-1, 5-1, so on and so on.
And the numbers are still always answers?
No, this has a whole bunch of different things. So part of what they are doing here is they are, in the Epic Geek Edition, adding questions about Star Wars, Lord of the Ring, Batman, Harry Potter, Doctor Who, The Walking Dead, a whole bunch of video games, TV show, basically all your modern geek culture.
Yeah.
So it's expanding that up. And look, it's... going for a pretty ambitious target of $100,000. It's only very, very new. Now, when I checked this at pretty much exactly this time last night, it had got a whopping $1,000 of backers with $1,000 of 15 backers. In 24 hours, that's gone up to $10,000, so it's 10% of the way. It's got 160 backers. This game, you can get the base game without any of the stretch goals for $42 US, or for $51 US, you get the base game plus all the potential stretch goals.
Ah.
It's also going to come with a whole bunch of individual player boards, and the player boards all have a unique power that you can use during your game. So they describe it as mixing up Wits and Wages with the abilities of Cosmic Encounter, which I think might be a bit of a stretch or a little bit of license.
Yes.
But some of the things, for example, you can be a zombie character, and the zombie, if they go all in on a bet and lose, they get resurrected with some free chips to bet again. So they don't really die. Or you can be a vampire, which sucks some of the winnings out of another player, that kind of thing. So I don't really think saying it's like Cosmic Encounter mashed up with Wits and Rages is fair to Cosmic Encounter, but it probably goes a little way to explaining how the individual powers go. Look, it's looking pretty good. It costs $25 shipping to Australia, which is 50% of the game cost. Yes. So it makes it high for what will probably be a relatively decent sized box, not a large one, unlike Scythe, which was maybe $13 a shipping. Mm. So anyway, go and check it out if you're interested in it. It's got a fair bit of time to go because it only just started. Another one that I had a look at, which I think is great for a lot of people out there, is Braille RPG Dice.
Ooh.
Now, this has been released by 64 Ounce Games, and they are some people who Rich Summer.
Oh,
Rich
yes.
Summer, who did
yes.
the cardboard cast.
Yeah.
He talked to them on his short-lived podcasting, but they specialise in bringing board gaming to visually impaired and blind people, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So 64 Ounce Games have released Braille RPG dice coming in D4, D6, D8, D10, D12, D20, and your percentile dice.
Mm.
And I just think it's fantastic. They've got their own 3D printer. They're doing a really small Kickstarter in terms of limiting the number of backers purely because of the confines of this is how long it takes us and our 3D printer to print all the molds. Pledges start at only $10 for one dice, and you can choose whichever one, but they're $50 for a pack of seven. So, look, there is
that's
a fair...
That's not too bad,
it's not, considering it's, they're saying it's going to be, because it's 3D printing, you can never 100% get the weighting right, but they've done a hell of a lot of playtesting and there's no, discernible differences. And look, anything that opens up our hobby to more people is fantastic.
Absolutely.
And obviously anyone who's got visual impairments, Mark, or, is blind, then that's fantastic. I think it's a wonderful way for our hobby to expand.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about Australia. Don't we love Australia, Mark?
Shoot, yeah.
Now, I
G'day, mates.
Had great pride in seeing that on Kickstarter, there are currently 10 live Australian games under the tabletop hobby.
Go Australia!
So that's awesome.
Go!
But I'm going to talk really quickly because we are running out of time and I'm only going to do four. So four, in no particular order. Circus Flicati by our mate Dave Harding and Grail Games. It's the greatest flea circus on earth. It is a fast, fun, push-your-luck card game that is designed by our mate, Dr. Reiner Knizia.
Yeah.
Each player is attempting to collect all the acts required for the gala show to be the toast of the town in flea circuses. They're only allowed, they being Grail Games, are only allowed to sell this game in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, UK and USA, so limiting that, not globally. It's only $21, including shipping, so it's the fifth game in their mic line.
Yeah, and it is a reprint of the classic Reiner Knizia.
Exactly
game.
Right, yep, so they've got the auth to do that. $5,000 of a $4,000 target. It's funded, it's backed, 6 days to go. You can pledge more and get some of the other games from the mic line as well, which is fantastic. I like that one. Go for that one. Another one, which we alluded to earlier before, is Burger Up by Rule and Make. Alan Chang and Alistair, who are going gangbusters.
I'll say.
Burger Up. It's a card-matching puzzle game about the art of hamburger making, as you would. You get to fill orders, earn prestige, and basically be the best burger chef around. Each card you get is not quite double-sided, but it has two possible ingredients on it, so you can flip them around to make the best burgers each. The best burgers earn more prestige only when you put the top bun on them.
Oh.
So you can build these absolutely crazy burgers. When you put the top bun on, though, you score points, but it also makes the other top buns more valuable.
Ooh,
so you're really trying to manage, do I want to go hard and fast and make a whole lot of burgers that aren't that great? Do I want to make one mega awesome gold burger and get lots of points? It's fantastic. It is $26,000 of a $9,500 target.
Wow.
So it's about 280-something percent funded, 520 backers, $24 plus $9 of shipping. So you get change for $40, which is
and
great.
And those guys obviously now have a huge following because it's just they're producing great quality games, great gameplay, but also great design.
Exactly right. And look, I've got a couple. Do we have time or have we got to go?
Yeah, we've got a couple more minutes.
All right. Well, let me talk about Wizard Survival by Crit Publishing. It's a 2-4-player free-for-all or co-op card game using spells against the powerful monsters that are going to try and attack you.
Oh.
Each player is controlling a powerful wizard who has a magic ring, Mark.
Now, as you do.
Exactly.
You're a wizard, honey.
Hey, each hero is tasked with defending the home or their home from the impending merciless doom of countless hordes of mana-infected beasts. Look, there is a limited mana pool. Mana is actually your action points that allows you things to do. This game sort of promotes itself as constantly having to make hard decisions about trying to keep yourself alive, trying to kill monsters, because when you kill more monsters, you get their mana, which will give you more ability.
Okay.
But it also has this sort of semi-co-op mode where if I see you're another player and you're struggling, so you might die, I'll say, yeah, I'll help you, but I need to get some of those, you know, good mana. Yeah. And then you turn around, kill the monster and say, I'm going to all keep that mana to myself and you can die now. But it also comes with a co-op mode where if you want to be lovey-dovey and friendly and all work together, you can do that. Hmm. Now, it is $5,000 of a $12,000 goal. It's got 20 days to go, so there's a fair old chance it'll fund. It certainly hit that sort of nice blip at the start where a lot of backers early on. 75 backers. It's $63 including free shipping. There's a lot of cards in there, so it's going really, really well. I think you will find that that will fund.
Fantastic. Always great to hear about Australian games funding on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Great to talk about all those great games. Apologies again for Trent's burping. And that's all we've got time for, surprisingly. We will see you again next week on The Dice Men Cometh. Have a great gaming week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.